This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Marisat Research Organization is Malaysia's first and only non-profit, non-governmental organization solely dedicated to the research and conservation of marine mammals in our country. I catch up with the co-founders of the organization, Dr. Louisa Panampalam and Farul Ismail Jamal Hisni, to find out about their continued efforts in working towards improving our marine environment and also about the World Oceans Day event that they are organizing this week. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Hi.
Hi, Juliet. We're good.
Fine, thank you.
Always good to have you guys on the show. So, yes, you've been on the show many times before, and I know I've asked you this many times. Some people in Malaysia still don't know that we have dolphins and whales in our waters. Can you remind us, you know, what is found in our waters?
We know that there are at least 27 species of cetaceans and dugong put together that have been found in our waters. And, you know, there are at least three or four species that we commonly encounter just off our coastlines. And in fact, even just a few weeks ago, our team was out surveying in Kuala Perlis and they encountered whales.
Wow.
And a week later, we had a sighting report from just a member of the public saying that they had seen a pair of whales. So these animals are around.
Okay, and I guess you get that question a lot, people not knowing that they're here in our waters?
Still.
Yeah, still.
Still.
Yeah.
So it means we still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, yeah. On a daily basis.
Yeah.
All right, but maybe you can remind us also about the work that you do through Marisat.
So Marisat, we started out doing mainly research work. We needed to gather baseline information about the marine mammals that are living along our coast. And that started with the Langkawi Dolphin Research Project, followed by the one in Matang, Dolphin Research Project, and then as well as the Dugong Research and Conservation Project. So we still run these research projects, but now we have branched out a little bit more into more outreach work, policy advocacy work, community development work. So acknowledging that conservation is not just about science, it's not just about doing research, but really having that research transcend categorical boundaries and borders and getting it out to the people who matter, and including people who live in the areas where we work, you know, getting them to understand why we're doing the work and how it's actually important to their daily living. You know, for example, we live in the city, yeah. They live there. And sometimes, you know, local communities don't have the means to really do conservation, maybe because of economic standing, life circumstances. And it's important in conservation work to provide means for them to be able to care about the environment. You know, even if it means providing them with skill sets that will help them go out and earn a living, or, you know, helping them adjust to new regulations and rules in their surrounding. You know, for example, if suddenly they have to stop fishing or they have to stop doing a certain thing that's related to the sea, how do we help them get back on the feet so that they're not going to ignore the importance of the environment? Because, of course, the main thing is to feed the family.
Of course, and find alternatives, I suppose,
yeah.
Right?
So we're doing a lot more these days. We're keeping the research going because we know that the work needs to be science-based, but then we're letting it cross boundaries.
Okay. Yeah. And, I mean, tell me about that, you know, how you actually got to know the people on the ground and to, because I'm sure they looked at you like, who are you, city slickers, coming and telling me what to do, something I've been doing, you know, for generations, perhaps.
Yeah, well, usually, it does take time, especially going to a new community, setting up a new project. It does take time to really get to know the people and for the people to get to know us and what we're doing. And earning that trust is not an easy thing, and it's not something that we take very lightly. We do engage with them regularly and continuously telling them what we do, why we do the things we do. And we've been fortunate so far that where we've worked, all the communities have been very supportive of our work. And they have been quite keen to know more and very interested whenever they see us at the jetty and they know that another survey is happening, to the point that, you know, Louisa sometimes gets called, you know, Dr. Dolphin. And our team members are known to have nicknames in various islands in around Malaysia.
What's Viral's nickname? He's happily outing you.
He hasn't had one yet, but we'll find him one.
Okay, all right. And I mean, we all know how beautiful cetaceans are, but why are they important ecologically?
I think ecologically, they're important because they sit at the top of the food chain. I mean, they are predated upon by sharks. Even within the marine mammal world, they are predated, you know, by other marine mammals, for example, killer whales or orcas, as they are known. But they are at the top of the food chain, so they do a top-down control of the marine food web, you know. And because they are at the top of the food chain, there is this thing that is called biomagnification, meaning that any contaminants that are in the environment trickles upwards in the food chain. So the higher up you go in the food chain, the more contaminants you can accumulate. Okay. And these animals have a thick layer of blubber or fat in their body. And that's where all the toxins and contaminants like to reside once they get into the system.
Okay.
So being up at the top of the food chain, when such an animal dies, or even if you are able to get a sample of blubber from a live animal, it can tell you a lot about what is happening in the ocean.
Okay.
You know, levels of contaminants. Of course, also in recent times, we have seen a lot of plastic ingestion by marine animals. You know, when you cut them open, they're full of plastics. For example, the one that was in Thailand recently, 80 kilograms of plastic bags or something like that. So it tells you what's happening out there. And because they're large, they're visible. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem, you can tell it right away that something's wrong. Versus if you're studying something a little smaller or really small down the food chain, it's not that it's not important, but it's harder to detect. And they have a charismatic appeal, you know, so they really act as great mascots for conservation.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of level of protection do they actually enjoy here in Malaysia specifically?
Well, here in Malaysia specifically, we do have legislation that protects mammals. They're all kind of covered under the Federal Fisheries Act, 1985, under the 1999 order, Endangered Species Order. But they do also have state-level protection in East Malaysia under the Sabah and Sarawak ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
The issue we have, I guess, from a legislative standpoint is the fact that whilst the Act is there, the implementation of it is under departments that have a different objective, if you like.
Sure.
So there is some improvements that can be made to the Act and how it's implemented.
And also the Act itself protects the animals. You know, it tells you that you cannot hunt, harass, kill, consume, trade, eat and that sort of thing. But there is no provision for the protection of the important habitats of these animals. And at a recent workshop that we were a part of in Kota Kinabalu about 2 months back now, with the IUCN Marine Protected Area, Marine Mammal Protected Area Task Force, just for Malaysia alone, we identified 4 or 5 important marine mammal areas. It's not an MPA, it's not a marine protected area. But what it was is that we were identifying areas that are important for marine mammals so that in the future we can use it as a basis to make a case for why a certain area needs to be protected. So while it's a good start that the animals themselves are protected, but the habitat, you know, I mean, they are a marine animal. They need the habitat. You can't do without it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we fall quite short in having specific laws that protect, you know, specific important habitat of marine mammals. Yeah,
right. Because like, I think, is it dugongs? They rely very much on the coastline as well for their survival. Am I talking rubbish here?
No. Dugongs, I mean, dugongs are shallow water species. I mean, certainly here in Malaysia they are. And they're highly dependent on the seagrass meadows.
Seagrass, that's right.
Yeah, and seagrass meadows aren't afforded any outright protection unless they fall within the 2 nautical mile marine park boundaries. Which are mainly a lot of time focused on coral reefs. Mm-hmm. So things like that. And of course, where we study our animals, you know, the habitat overlaps considerably with a lot of human activities, a lot of fishing, commercial and artisanal, tourism, coastal development. So there's a lot of pressures that are going into these coastal habitats, which are where we have over the years, observe the animals feeding, breeding, socializing, traveling, nursing. So there's a huge overlap between us and them. And so it's critical that we start looking into laws or regulations that protect important marine mammal areas.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, I mean, all the things that you mentioned just now, those are some of the main conservation challenges being faced by cetaceans?
Yeah. And just to add to that, I think the protection of habitats right now for marine areas in Malaysia is only accorded through establishment of marine parks. And the way marine parks are regulated currently is that it's a total no-take zone. So basically, once you establish a marine park, a host of human activities are banned. And I think we as a nation need to think how to manage that, because that basically gives an ultimatum to the communities that rely on those resources and saying that, okay, once we do a marine park, we're only caring about the environment and we don't care about the communities, and we should not be doing that. I think we need to move towards looking at enhanced management practices, probably introducing procedures and regulations that manage those activities rather than disallowing it outright.
And growing stewardship of the local communities, you know, giving them a sense of ownership to the area. I think it's very hard living in an area and then, you know, a lot of laws are imposed without really considering that at the end of the day, they are the ones who are there, you know. And I think it's important to give them some form of ownership, responsibility maybe even, to be able to self-govern a little bit amongst themselves, you know, either on a trust basis or following a procedure, but not that just, you know, people are coming in, whether it's the authorities or, you know, NGOs or anybody else saying you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, you're going to be, you know, punished and penalized. So it's important to give them that sense of ownership because it is their place. And at the end of the day, they spend, you know, a lot more time than us who just come for short periods and leave.
Mm-hmm. And I guess they rely on it, isn't it? So they would obviously also look after it probably better than...
Exactly.
Anyone
so
else.
It's a case of giving them that sense of empowerment, but also reminding them that, hey, you can have this responsibility, but if you mess it up, you're messing up your own backyard. And this form of conservation where local communities do get involved to a certain extent has been exercised or practiced in, you know, various parts of the world to varying degrees of success, obviously. Yeah. But it has been, and I think that certainly in Peninsular Malaysia, there's no reason why we shouldn't go more into this approach. Yeah.
And that is something I wanted to ask you about. I mean, you've said before there's no one-size-fits-all recipe for conservation, right? So what is Marisette's approach to conservation specifically?
I think our approach first and foremost is to understand, to listen, to get the whole picture, and then to engage. We don't want to just turn our backs or, you know, get all fired up and, you know, shout in the streets. Yeah. We think it's counterproductive. We do have our core principles that we abide by. So we, you know, if something goes beyond those principles, you know, we do have to make a decision whether to walk away or disengage or whatever. But certainly we have to look at it case by case. Every place is different. The conservation needs of the animals are different. The communities behave differently as well. Sometimes the jurisdictional circumstances are also different. So the most important thing is to really understand what's going on the ground, considering both sides of, you know, every story, mm-hmm. and considering also what we know, what we believe in, and trying to find the sweet spot, you know, the middle ground where we can make things work. Because at the end of the day, we want conservation to work. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, I guess, customizing based on situation.
And I guess that is something that you guys are really working on as well. I mean, how are you engaging with other... there's so many different, I guess, people playing a part in this, right?
Yeah, so many stakeholders. It's not something that we first thought of when think about conservation. We do engage with people of various backgrounds. We work with governments. We work with other NGOs. But we also work with local communities, local businesses, corporations. So we try to be as inclusive as we can, although we do kind of have to run our own due diligence, if you like, to see how a particular project can manage the stakeholders. We don't want too many stakeholders that the objectives are not met. Mm-hmm. So it is a fine balancing act. Sometimes we've been fortunate to get stakeholders that are really empowered, really engaged, and sometimes not so much. So we'll see.
And I think the other thing is to ensure that the right information goes out, mm-hmm. you know, to the public. I think there's already a lot of misinformation out there, you know, myths, legends, and what have you. And I think it's very important that what we do with our what we gather from our research on the ground and engagement with people on the ground is translated appropriately so that it is easy to digest for people to understand the issues, the challenges. And because at the end of the day, it's hard for people to support our cause if they don't understand what's going on. Sure. So I think building that a channel of clear communication with the public is important, and also providing avenues for local conservation talent to grow, you know, providing students and just anybody, you know, from the Malaysian tapestry a chance to be a part of what we do, to get a hands-on experience and to decide for themselves, you know, the value of the work that we do, mm-hmm. and hopefully go forth to
carry on that
carry
work.
That message. Yeah.
And I mean, tell me a little bit about what you are seeing on the ground. I mean, are there any kind of trends happening now that's worrying you, anything of that sort?
On the ground, there are some positive trends, and I think that's something that
that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that we've seen in the sites that we worked in. We do definitely see a lot more engagement with those who are there, whether it's local communities or the government agencies that are in charge of certain areas, because they have more awareness of the biodiversity there and its importance. But that's still very much site-specific, and we do want to get that level of awareness out of those sites and going further out into the whole country, really. Mm-hmm. Negative trends, I don't know whether we can call it trends because we haven't really quantified it.
Sure.
But
sure.
We do see continual problems like waste. We still see a lot of marine debris washing up in our shores. We still see a lot of activities, coastal activities, causing habitat degradation, overfishing, non-selective fishing. So a lot of these issues that we've talked about for many, many years is still happening. And I think that's a cause for concern, knowing that groups like us and others who have been in this conservation field for many years have been saying things should change, and things are still happening.
And I think the worrying trend, you know, being in the field, what I'm noticing a lot lately, more and more, is that we are seeing a lot more of our animals swimming in a sea of rubbish.
Okay.
A lot of the time. They're just in a flotsam of all sorts of things. You can almost go shopping on the sea because
gross.
You can pick up anything. You know, you could pick up a soft toy, you could pick up slippers, you could pick up a fishing trap, you know.
Diapers, I've heard of diapers.
Diapers, styrofoam boxes,
tapao
packaging, I mean, anything. So we... It's a worrying trend because the rubbish is everywhere. I was just in the field a few days ago, and we were collecting samples for our dugong feeding ecology study and digging up some seagrass. And I kept pulling at this thing that was a little harder to pull out. So I sort of let go and let the sediment settle. And what I noticed was that I thought it was a root, a thick root of a seagrass, or maybe I was pulling on a little worm or a sea cucumber that was buried deep in the sediment. But it was this piece of plastic. It was a piece of plastic that had come unraveled at some point from a mineral water bottle.
Oh.
And it somehow settled deep into the sediment, buried in there. And it was a reminder that this thing is getting everywhere, even deep in the sediment.
Mm-hmm.
Lodging itself there forever and ever. We just had a volunteer join our survey, and she had just done a study on like microplastics, you know, in the seafood that we eat, and it's all there. You know, it's getting into the system, into our system, into our food, and so it's a huge problem. I think that unless people get out there, it remains a bit of a mythical thing, like that you just see people going on and on about on social media or documentaries. But really, if you know, walk on a beach, just from Johor all the way to East Malaysia, I have photos of just rubbish on the beach. So it's everywhere. And I think that's one of the biggest worrying trend. I mean, just from the time we've started talking until now, how much rubbish has entered the ocean,
yeah,
or been produced or been tossed out, made it to landfill. So that's worrying. And this is the environment that the animals are living in. And this is the environment that eventually somehow comes back into our system, be it our food or our, you know, health and things like that.
Yeah, and you know, if people don't really care about the animals, I mean, what do they care about whales or dugongs, for example? They should care about their own health at the very least,
yeah,
right? You need to think of that in the bigger picture.
I mean, one of the things I've sort of started telling people is that you don't really have to care about the ocean at all. I mean, I don't expect everybody to have an interest in the sea or in nature, but at least just have an interest in your own future. Mm-hmm. Because if you have an interest in that, the rest will take care of itself, because you would ensure that you will be able to live happily, healthily, and hopefully a long, fulfilling life, you know, without being impacted by pollutants and contaminants from the environment. So really, it's not at all about being an ocean lover or a, you know, green kind of person. It's really just about being self-centered to care about your own self, and that will take care of itself.
Yeah, and that's something that's so easily done. I mean, that's just something that you can individually do. It's not like it doesn't require policy change. It doesn't require anything else like that. It's a individual choice.
I think people just need a paradigm shift in the way they think about environment and conservation.
And that's where you guys are coming in. You are going to have a World Oceans Day celebration, which you guys are organizing this week. So tell me about that. What's happening?
Well, a lot of activities are happening. So the event itself is starting on the 12th of July on Thursday, and it'll carry on until Sunday, 15th. We do have a lot of our partners who is going to be there, opening up booths, explaining about things that they are doing to help the ocean, whether it's conducting research, doing conservation activities, and volunteer opportunities would be up for grabs, basically.
Nice.
Yeah, anyone who wants to know about what's going on out there and in the field, this is the right time for it, because there are a lot of organizations that are doing a lot of great things, and they're going to be there during the 4 days. We do also have some interactive exhibits, things like an ocean maze where you go in, you learn about the issues facing the oceans, what are the highlights of the ocean and the low points of the current situation, you know, in the ocean. We've been running a photo competition online in the run-up to this event, so we are going to have the prize-giving ceremony there, the best shots from that competition. And we have had some really, really good shots from amateur photographers.
Oh, nice.
So people can come and have a look at this really nice view of the ocean, probably a different perspective, I guess, from what we're used to seeing. And then we also have some other information and performances and demonstrations happening on stage throughout the course of the event.
Okay, so this is happening over 4 days.
Over 4 days, yeah.
And it's over at Wan Utama?
Wan Utama.
Okay. And what kind of age group are you targeting? Is this for everybody? I mean, can little ones come? You know, is this something for everyone?
There'll be a little bit for everyone, okay. I would say.
Definitely families can come,
yeah.
And, you know,
Get them young, you know, that's what I always say. So there's something for the young ones.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. There'll be a lot of interactive activities catered for the young ones, for the children, for the teenagers, and a lot of information that can be shared with the adults.
And I think a great opportunity for young school leavers who are considering a future in this field or in the marine sciences, because we'll also be having a little marine biological lab corner.
Nice.
Where we'll feature certain marine specimens, which have been kindly loaned to us by University of Malaya and some other researchers who are our colleagues. And so, you know, they can have a taste of, you know, what it looks like in a mini lab. I think it's good for schools, you know, schools who may want to just organize a little day trip down to see the maze and the exhibits and learn a bit more. Great for school trips, you know, rombongan sambil belajar kind of thing. And also for anyone who is interested in trying to perhaps lead a more minimalist lifestyle, we have vendors who upcycle and recycle goods that can be used for everyday living, which has very minimal impact or no impact at all to the environment. So it really has a little bit of everything, and highlighting issues that we wanted our, you know, the people participating as well to highlight issues that really were relatable to our society, not in some faraway land or somewhere offshore, you know, just things that are happening every day that we can think about.
And so, and this also, I think, just to put it out there, is a great opportunity to really meet the team. to be honest, our team don't really meet each other much because we're the whole
busy doing hard work.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's what we're doing. Most of us are out in the field a lot, and this year will be a great opportunity for those who have been following Marisette's life so far. This would be a nice time to actually meet the team and for businesses to really meet up with us and to see how we can work together for ocean conservation. I mean, with this event itself, we've had the support from Pernod Ricard, from GSR Environmental Consultancy. So there are various ways. And Giordano has come in recently.
Datai Langkawi.
So different sectors, but all ultimately going towards the same cause, which is ocean conservation. So this is a nice way to have a chat with us. If they would like to, and then we can see how we can work together.
And we have a young, vibrant team. You know, I think that's one of the things that Farah and I are really proud of. We started out as a two-person dream, and we've managed to build up a team now of, you know, young Malaysians who all started from scratch, who never imagined they could go into this sort of field to do this sort of research work, and they've learned a lot over the years, but they've also sort of grown into their own and sometimes practice conservation through their own lens, you know. And so I think it's a great time to meet this team that it was not a team that was imported from somewhere or, you know, that had all the expertise in the world when we found them, but that they too have gone through a journey of learning of their own. And I think it's great to speak to them to get a perspective of what it's like to be young, to be Malaysian, and to be working in this field. Yeah. So come visit us at One Utama Shopping Centre, ground floor, Centre Court, this coming weekend, and we'll be there. 12th to the 15th of July. Yeah, okay, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay. Okay, excellent. And if you'd like more information, I guess we can go to the Marisette website?
Yep.
That's marisette.org?
Yes, correct.
All right. Okay, so thank you so much for joining me today. And
Thank you.
Everybody, don't forget to make your way to One Utama from the 12th to the 15th. There's so many things for everybody. And if you'd like more information, that website again is marisette.org. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.